Hi there, and welcome to another edition of the Soccer Sessions podcast. I'm John Molinaro, chief soccer reporter for Sportsnet.ca. Hope you're enjoying your Thursday wherever you are listening from. No James Sharman on the show today as he has family commitments, so I'll be flying solo as host. But we do have two special guests on Twitter. In the second half of the show, we'll welcome Andrew Wee from MLSsoccer.com to talk about the MLS 24 under 24 list that came out earlier this week and that always manages to cause a bit of a stir. Before that, though, we're excited to have Kurt Larson, Toronto FC beat reporter for the Toronto Sun newspaper, to talk all things TFC as they push for a playoff berth with five games to go in the MLS season. Kurt, how's it going?
Hey, I only came on because I thought Sharman was going to be here.
No, sorry. He backed out when he knew you were coming on. So, yeah.
All right. Happy to do it.
Well, listen, Toronto currently sits fifth in the Eastern Conference with a five-point lead on Orlando City, who is seventh. 5 points behind DC United with five games to go. How confident are you that the Reds are going to make the playoffs? And if they do, what do you think their chances are of hosting a first-round playoff game?
How confident am I they're going to make the playoffs? I think statisticians have them at like 98% right now. I think they'd have to probably lose like four of the next five games to potentially not make it. So they're going to make the playoffs. About hosting a playoffs, a playoff game, one of those first round games, it's going to come down to not only what TFC does, but I think what DC United does. DC has a few difficult games left. If they lose a couple of those and TFC manages to win four or five, or, pick up 11 to 13 points over the next five games, we'll have a chance. But it's important. You don't want to start on the road in this league in the playoffs. It's one and done, and history shows that teams that start on the road in this first round usually lose.
What constitutes a successful season for TFC, do you think? Is it simply making the playoffs? Is that enough? Do they have to win a game? Do they have to host a game? They got to do both? What's the success here, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because I think it's going to be one of those things where you're going to have to take everything into account at the season's end, win or lose in the playoffs, and kind of do an overall look at what's happened this season. I don't think it's really fair to say, lose in the first round and it's been a bad season, or, even get to the conference, the conference finals is a good season, because, the record hasn't been good this season. They're below 500 still. So even making the playoffs at this point, you have to look and ask whether or not Greg Vanney's done, the best he can with this roster. At the same time, there's been good moments, and there's something to be said for, continuity and finally keeping a coach for more than a single season. So it's not the answer you probably wanted, but it's one of those things where I think you're going to have to look at how they finish these last five games. Do they go into the playoffs with, full steam ahead, and how they play in the playoffs? Playing well in the playoffs and getting knocked out might be good enough for some fans. I think it's going to be important that they get back to BMO Field and host a game, though, because that's the only reason, that's the only way they're going to get the city behind them and get people excited again is to host the game at BMO Field.
And does the same apply for Greg Vanney, do you think? Do we have to wait until the end of the campaign to see how things play out in terms of what his future is with this club?
I mean, I think so, because right now, you can't really make a determination as to whether, he's gotten the most out of this team just because of everything that's happened, the seven games on the road, the missing key players, a few injuries here and there. I think now's the time you're going to see, has he really brought this team together? I mean, there's no excuse now not to get the most out of the team. He has almost every player at his disposal. There's four games at home they've been talking about for, seemingly since the beginning of the year. Let's just get to these last few home games and we're going to win them, and we're going to get into the playoffs, and we're going to do well. So I think it's all there for the taking for Greg Vanney. I think a good showing through these next two, 3 weeks and a good showing in the playoffs, even if they don't make MLS Cup, a good showing is still going to bode well for him. But it's still very much, it's still very much hanging in the balance, I think.
We're talking to Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun here on the Soccer Central podcast. What have you made of Vanney in terms of the way he's deployed Jozy Altidore throughout the season? It seems like he's played him in a number of different positions. The last couple of games, he had him out on the right side of midfield, relying on him for pretty strong defensive duties. It seems like this is a guy who still is searching for a role with this club.
Yeah, I think he's made mistakes, and I think Greg Vanney would also be the first one to tell you he's made mistakes. You shouldn't be trying to find your preferred lineup this far into the season, in my opinion. I think there's good reason as to why he's tried to mix it up. If you look at how bad the club's been defensively, I think he's been trying everything in his power to set the team up in a way where it doesn't stymie their attack, but also allows them to defend and have more defined roles in the defense. That's why they've gone to that 4-2-3-1 at times, which is pushed out or out to the left, is because they want to make sure they have enough bodies in front of that back four, and they want to make sure they have enough bodies in midfield to help guard Michael Bradley when he, you know, surges forward. But at the same time, you're right. I mean, it's kind of left Josie, you know, hanging in the balance is what his role is. Is his role to, you know, play with his back to goal and play off and play with Javinko, or is his role to be wide and get forward in kind of a 4-3-3 attack? He hasn't looked settled. You know, hopefully in this new, I guess it's not new, but this 4-4-2 they've been playing recently, maybe his role will be a little bit more defined, and maybe he'll be able to get on the end of some of Javinko's service.
Obviously, Sebastian Javinko has been TFC's best player this season. Who else do you think has been influential for the Reds this campaign?
I mean, I don't think it'd be any stretch to say Josh Williams has been key. I mean, You know, people are going to talk about Justin Morrow, and he's been solid, but we know that. We know Justin Morrow is going to be a guy who plays 30-plus games for you every season and who puts in a shift every time. But, I mean, Josh Williams comes over. He's put on waivers. He comes over out of nowhere, and now he's, you know, he's anchoring the back four. You know, meanwhile, you got guys like Kentari and Perkey with a lot of experience, and, you know, Williams is really pushing them for playing time and even playing ahead of them sometimes. So, you know, Josh Williams, you know, probably a key addition no one's talking about, and I think he's going to be a key player if this team indeed makes some noise down the stretch, which, you know, they're expected to, quite frankly.
You mentioned Kentari and Perkey there. Earlier this week, the MLS salary list came out, and what caught my eye about TFC is that Ahmed Kentari and Damien Perkey, between them, they're making, I think it's a combined $740,000. That's a lot of money to be tied up in two center backs, especially ones that I would argue, you know, probably not living up to expectations. I mean, are the Reds getting value with those contracts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing I'd say is that history shows in this league that foreign players that come into the league usually don't settle in until their second year. That's usually when you see the best of them. I wouldn't disagree with what you've said. I mean, it's obvious that they haven't been, you know, what TFC needs them to be all the time. I think there's an argument that Perkey was good early. He's been good throughout the season in certain, you know, at certain moments. He was good last week, but he's also had his bad moments, and he's had injuries, and you know, like you said, hasn't lived up to the standard Vanny had probably hoped he'd be week in, week out. Kentari, he's, you know, what can you say, really? We haven't really seen, you know, him and sustain a long period on the pitch. He seems to be making mistakes every time out. You know, gives away a bad PK against Kansas City, then goes to New York and has some issues, and then the punch to the face at New York City was absurd. Yeah. But like I said, maybe he hasn't settled, and maybe these last few games are going to give him a chance. Question becomes, has Williams played him out of a spot, and do you go with Williams Perkey instead of Perkey Kentari?
And what do you think about that? I mean, I've been very impressed with the way Josh Williams has kind of come in and settled things down. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm Greg Vanney. I know these guys are on higher contracts, but just with the way that Williams has sort of provided stability there, I'm not sure he's lost his starting spot.
No, I think the way it's shaping up is Greg Vanney prefers Jackson on the right if he's ever going to be healthy again. I think he's inching back towards a return, and I think he likes Williams and Perkey in the middle and Morrow on the left. So I think that's the four he's going to go with. I think that's the four he should go with because, you know, quite frankly, it's the four that have been in form of late, and you know, there's really no reason to sit a guy like Williams when he hasn't really done anything to call on being benched.
Sure. Speaking of Perkey, there was an incident between you and him in the locker room after Toronto FC's win over Colorado last weekend. I was there, but maybe you could describe for our listeners what happened.
Yeah, I think we can all agree all of us who were there were a bit confused by it at first. We didn't really know what was going on. We saw Damien was upset about something, which didn't really make much sense to begin with because they just won 3-1 over Colorado.
And he scored and played well.
Yeah, played very well. Even in the post game press conference, I even asked Greg Vanney. I said, "Hey, you know, this has been a bounce back game for Perkey. You know, he was fantastic. You know, can you talk a little bit about that?" So a little bit strange. Long story short, he kind of emerges from the showers area and still yelling. Everybody's kind of like, what's going on here? But he was speaking in French, of course. So, you know, I'm not smart enough to know French, so I couldn't understand any of it. then he turns his attention to me and he starts having a go at me. And to this day, I still really don't know what he was angry about. I think it had something to do with, you know, a few of the things I'd written about Cantari playing in New York City and the punching incident that he had that he got suspended for. You know, I've had a few people from TFC reach out to me and say that, you know, it wasn't acceptable and, you know, it won't happen again kind of thing. So, you know, for me, it's kind of water under the bridge. I think at this level, you know, players play with such an edge and they get so excited and they get so emotional that, you know, I can't completely fault them for that. What I can fault people for is not being able to contain their emotions and talk to you one-on-one and just tell you what they're concerned about. Because I think, you know, that's the way it should be handled. And, you know, like I said, for me, it's in the past and it's happened to me before. I mean, I had a similar incident with Darren O'Dea about 3 years ago.
Right.
And him and I talk all the time now and we talk with it, you know, we talk with the team all the time now. So, you know, it happens and you know, hopefully it won't in the future because I think all of us write critical stuff and all of us just want to do our jobs.
Well, and full credit to TFC and Coach Greg Vanney, because I was at practice on Tuesday and they had said that they, you know, had spoken to Damian after the game and let him know that this was unacceptable. And that in fact, they talked to all the players. So it's good that they addressed it pretty quickly and that they reached out to you. So I'm happy for that. I was beside you, when he was kind of going off on this rant in French. You know, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I mean, it was a really ugly scene. And I don't know about you, but I was a little bit scared that he might kind of lose his cool completely and kind of get physical. I mean, what was going through your head when this was going on? I mean, were you at all fearful?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're not human. If you know, all the situations and all the possibilities and all the outcomes don't kind of go through your mind, you know, it's important to keep a cool head and kind of look at, you know, what should I do in this situation? And, you know, maybe in years past, I would have spoken up and said something and held my ground. But, you know, I think at that point I just said, you know, 3-1 win. We've already spoken to Vanny, and what am I doing here? Maybe I'll just leave the scene and end this now, and hopefully that helps the player calm down. And I think that's what happened. I think it was just an easy way to defuse the situation. And you know, after I left, I don't really know what happened after that, but yeah, it was fine. And like I said, I've moved on. I'm going to show up training this week and go on from there and enjoy the rest of the season, because I think it's going to be exciting for TFC fans.
Well, I think you did make the right move by leaving, although, you know, I certainly would have understood if you wanted to stand your ground, but I thought you did the right thing to diffuse the situation, and Perky eventually did calm down, although when you left, he was then sort of going on a French rant against the rest of us. So, but he eventually did calm down, and it was good to see. It was, as I said, it was just an ugly scene, and you know, hopefully that's in the past now. Kurt, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, man. Tell Andrew we bye.
I will. Take care.
All right.
That was Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun. Really good reporter who covers the team for a long time now, and got a great deal of respect and a friendship with Kurt. He's a really good guy. So, as I said, it was an unfortunate incident with Damian Perky, and just standing beside him as it was unfolding, it was very surreal, and I was just, as I said, I was fearful, and you know, I wasn't even in the focal point of Damian's rant, so I can't even imagine what Kurt was thinking, but he handled himself quite well. But as I said, that's in the past, and we can move on now. We're pleased to welcome Andrew Wiebe to the Soccer Central podcast. Andrew is the features editor for Major League Soccer's official website. Among his duties, Andrew was involved in the MLS 24 Under 24, an annual list that ranks the 24 best players under the age of 24 in the league. It always creates a stir and gets people talking. Andrew's been kind enough to take time out of his busy schedule and joins us now on the phone from New York. Andrew, how's it going?
Going good, guys. Going good. You know, just monitoring Twitter for the inevitable abuse that comes with the release of 24 Under 24. No biggie, though. That's what this is about, creating some conversation. So happy to be here.
Well, and we'll get to that in a minute, because that's one of the things I want to talk to you about. But maybe before we get to that, you can tell us a little bit about the history behind the MLS 24 Under 24 and the genesis of it. How did it become to be?
Well, I think, it started with the website, the rebranding of the website. I don't know if you guys remember MLS.net, but
yep.
MLS Soccer came along, and there was a desire, I think, to put a spotlight on some of the special young talents in the league. And what better way in this day and age than a ranking system? And so since the start of MLS Soccer, we've done this every year right around September, right as kind of that playoff push is building, and you've started to see who's really stood out during that season in particular, or maybe who's taken a jump from seasons past. So, it got started. Different folks have ran it at different times. I ran it last year. Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst, who I'm sure your listeners know, he was kind of the head honcho this year with a bunch of us running point, of course, being that it is such a large project. But, votes go out all over the North American soccer sphere. You're talking about Canada here. We had folks that RDS, we had Kurt Larson, who I think just came on with you guys.
Yep.
Pat LeDuc was one of our guys that did this for us. And then you go up and down the list in the U.S. Of course, we have our own voting that comes in from our staff. We're as MLS nerds through and through. I don't think that there's anybody out there that watches more MLS than the folks here at MLS Soccer. But, Brian Dunsith, Alexi Lawless.
Jeff Carlisle, too.
Will Parchman. Yeah, Jeff Carlisle. I mean, It's a good list. Kyle McCarthy's a big name, and they vote on five categories, and we kind of put it all together and see what the list fits out. The categories: technical ability, soccer IQ, physical attributes, personality, and potential. And speaking from experience, it really is fascinating to see how folks rate players on different scales and what they value most and maybe where the discrepancies are and how that then manifests itself in the final list. It's always a fun time.
Is there a short list that they're working off, or how does it work? And how does the voting work in terms of, the candidate, people coming up with the candidates to vote on?
So we have the full list of players, which off the top of my head, I think eligible players, that is, I think this year was something like 180.
Okay.
And then we cut it down to 75 players internally. And then we send those 75 out to the voters, and they put together their ballot. Now, even 75 players, I can tell you, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of mental exertion. It takes a lot of thinking back to games you watched, looking at all the different things that are available to us now, statistically and anecdotally. It really is a grueling voting process. And then, you put together the ballot, you send it in, and we crunch the numbers, and the list comes out. So we're at that point now, and we're hearing from folks out there, fans, other journalists, the guys who voted themselves, saying, "Hey, what the heck happened?" But I think it's a good list. I think it's close. It's never perfect, right?
Sure.
It's never perfect. Everybody has their own opinion, but I think it's close to hitting it this year.
We're talking to Andrew Wiebe of MLSsoccer.com here on the Soccer Central podcast. For people who haven't seen it, and I encourage you to go to MLSsoccer.com because it really is, I think, a fascinating project that they put together. FC Dallas's Fabian Castillo tops the list, while Kakuta Mane of the Vancouver Whitecaps is number two. Canadian rookie Kyle Larin of the Orlando City is 10th. Matias Laba is 12th, and fellow Whitecaps teammate Octavio Rivero is 18th. No members of Toronto FC and or Montreal Impact made the list. Any surprises about this year's list for you? Anyone you thought, if you don't want to give away who you voted for, that's fine, but anybody on the list that was made the list that you didn't think should be there or was a little bit higher than you thought? What stood out?
I think you look up and down this list, and most of them make sense. There are some guys on here that, for me, are still very much unproven in MLS, and I know that can sometimes be a hard balance. Do you vote for the guys that have truly been productive in the league that we've seen do it on a day-to-day basis? The guys, Kyle Larin would be one of those guys with the season he's having. Matias Laba is an obvious one of the best holding midfielders in the league for me. But then you have a guy like Lucas Milano on the list, who the Portland Timbers paid, multi-millions of dollars for, but hasn't done the business yet in MLS. And that's where you start to look up and down and say, okay, well, how do I see this list? What should it represent to me? He's one that to me maybe didn't have the track record yet here to be where he's at, but obviously voters thought very, very highly of him. I mean, you look at some of the players that didn't make the list, but the biggest shock for me, and it's not a shock because, I think his play has shown, it was Luis Gil. I mean, this is a guy who was he was all the way up, I believe, to number two in years past. I mean, he was at the top of this list, and his fortunes at RSL as far as playing time just haven't followed along accordingly, and you saw that the voters punished him for things of that nature. I definitely was a little bit surprised to see, like, say, a guy like, let's say, like Matt Polster come in. He came in at 21, so he's at the back end, but a little bit of, you know, playing for a bad team in Chicago, playing defensive midfielder, right back, wasn't exactly in the spotlight, so to speak. But as one of the, you know, top two or three rookies, I think people definitely paid attention to that. In Vancouver, Christian Teixeira maybe just didn't have enough time to impress the voters. But if you look at what he's done, wow. And then I have to assume that coming in here, or maybe old homeless Kurt, as I like to call him, he probably had some beef on that Jonathan Osorio stuff, which, you know, that's a tough one too. The kid is a really good player. But then you look up and down this list and you say, okay, who do I move off? And that's where it gets pretty tough, because everybody on there, it feels like at least this year, is deserving.
So who did you vote for? Who did you have number one?
I had Fabian Castillo number one. I think he right now is kind of a poster child for the development model that MLS can be and that MLS can help facilitate. You know, he comes in from Colombia, a raw player, but a guy who had U-20 national team, U-17 national team experience. He comes in off that World Cup, U-20 World Cup, and he'd done well in the domestic league, but everybody knew he was so raw. He was so fast. He was so skilled physically, but the final product, I must say, just wasn't there. And even the first couple of years in MLS, we saw that. But over time, Oscar Pareja really has molded this guy into the type of player that, you know, given a little bit more consistency, could be in an MVP discussion. I mean, I think he's certainly in an all-star discussion, and I think it speaks volumes when you start to see his name linked with Club America and other big clubs in Europe, and then to be called up to the Colombian national team. He really is, for me, kind of a poster child of what MLS can be when it comes to, you know, making a move on a young, talented player that maybe doesn't have a proven track record but has the potential. And then you have the right coaches, the right environment, the right player mentality, which is just as important, to improve at a rapid pace. And look at him now. You know, Kakuta Mane could be in the same boat. Carl Robinson, we've seen his ability with young players. I thought those guys were deserving, certainly. I would have moved a guy like Matt Miazga, I think, up to number three, because I think Sebastian Legette, though very, very talented, I think Miazga actually has higher long-term potential, and he's still just so young. But apart from that, I'm pretty good with everything. You know, it didn't directly reflect my list, but most of the guys that I had on mine made it. The one thing that I will say is that if you were going on potential, this list maybe doesn't reflect what your list in your past did, and I think that's also a reflection of the number of young guys playing roles for their teams and playing big roles for their teams and really showing it on the field. So people measured it on production sometimes, and that's fair.
No, and that's fair enough, absolutely. I didn't have any major problem with the list. The only one I would maybe take exception was I was a bit surprised that Laba was that low at number 12, and maybe that's because he's a defensive midfielder and it's not a very sort of sexy position. Any surprise on you for that he was that low?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised, and I think it's the reason you said right there. You know, it's hard when a guy like Kwadwo Poku is, you know, pulling down the field and scoring two goals in a game with Lampard and Villa and Pirlo in the mix. I mean, the fact is, and I think I mentioned this before, I would put Mateus Laba at the very top of MLS in terms of ball-winning ability in the midfield. I mean, he is an absolute pit bull. He is a dog. I can't imagine that Vancouver are not getting hit up by clubs looking at this guy. With his pedigree to Argentina till now, to what he's doing in the league, I mean, he's a huge part of what makes that team tick. I personally love him as a player, and I assume that you have listeners out there, Toronto FC listeners, that are looking at this list saying, huh, we don't have anybody on the list, but some guy we're familiar with in the name of Mateus Laba and another guy named Joao Plata are here. Those guys seem like guys we could use. That has to be a tough one for some Toronto FC fans out there, but I'm on board with you, man. Mateus Laba is a hell of a player. I think we can agree, and I think most fans can agree, that this list is for fun and it's not definitive, and nobody out there is saying that Mateus Laba is the 12th best player under 24 in MLS. simply the voters that came back and their ballots said that, but there's the fun. We can argue about it. We can debate it. We can go all down sorts of different paths. So always a good time.
Well, and I think that's an important point to raise, because the one thing that really baffles me about this list every year that it comes out is the sheer vitriol and rage that comes from people.
Oh, yeah.
I get it for what it is. It's a conversation starter. It's not meant to be sort of holy scripture and the final word, as you said, like the 24 best sort of youngsters in the league. It's just a debate, and it is what it is. It's supposed to be it's good water cooler conversation. But people, they put such weight in this. I mean, are they missing the point of this?
I think that I don't necessarily think they're missing the point, because I always will support fans who feel passionate about their own players and their own opinions of players. I think that's what makes the game so fun.
Sure.
Is that we all have our own viewpoint, and this game is one that, you know, you can't go and say, hey, look, this guy's, his on-base percentage is this, or his wins above replacement is this, or, you know, I'm blanking on it, but I think it's the plus-minus in hockey, where you can really just,
right,
you have a definitive thing that you can say, this is the deal. It depends on what kind of environment these kids are in. It depends on how much playing time they've gotten. It depends on what games you've watched, what your opinions are of them. And the one thing, the clarification that I would always make to folks with this list, is that this is not Major League Soccer's list. This is MajorLeagueSoccer.com list. It's not completely separate, but it is. I mean, we put it to a number of people. It's not like this came down from on high. We simply put ballots out, and we reported what came back. And by doing so, I think you see that variety in opinion, in judgment, in the way that people weigh things. And to me, that's almost just as fascinating as the list is the way that, you know, two different people can look at the same player and have two completely different opinions and have both of those people be experts in their field. You know, these people, you know, Alexi Lalas, I don't think he debated his credentials. All these journalists that we have on this list, they watch oodles of games. It's just fascinating to see how people, swing back and forth and what they value and what they don't.
No, I'm with you. As I said, I don't consider this as, like I said, holy scripture or the final word. It's just a conversation starter, and it's a good way to get a dialogue going. And obviously, mm-hmm. you've achieved that, because every year it gets dialogue going. It gets sort of fans talking about this, and some are a little irate more than others. But it always fascinates me about the response that you get from this.
Hey, passion. I'm never gonna tell people to tone that down. Like I said, I mean, ultimately for me, and the thing I take from this list, the thing I really take to heart is, I love the domestic game. I love, I love watching Major League Soccer grow, and I like watching every other aspect of the domestic league here in the U.S. and Canada grow. And to see a list like this, and then to have people say, well, what the hell were you thinking? This guy should be on the list. You're all a bunch of idiots. To me, that says, oh, my God, look at all these great young players. Look at this great young foundation that this league, that these two countries, that look at what we have. Look at this embarrassment of riches that we didn't have 5, 6, 10 years ago. How much better can it be? How much better will it be? What will this list look like in 5 years or 10 years? Well, we start seeing 19-year-old kids all up and down the list that have 3, 4 years of professional experiences and are game changers in their first teams, and maybe even game changers at the international level. I mean, it really, for me, it makes me start dreaming, and it makes me drool, to be honest with you. It's an exciting thing.
Andrew, what kind of feedback, if any, do you get from players or the clubs or even general managers?
I think it's a mixture of things. We don't get a ton of feedback. The clubs, obviously, if their player makes the list, are they're stoked, and they're going to put out press releases this year with it. You see them promoting it on their properties. You see it in bios on player. You see it in the media. I think that one of the things that I find the most useful in this series, and I have it from years past experience, is kind of the anonymous scouting reports that you get on each and every player profile page.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you start to get, you know, a little bit of a behind-the-scenes look into what these different technical staffs think, what the general managers think. One of the most fascinating things I've done as a member of this staff was last year, you know, building out that section of it and getting on the phone with guys for 45 minutes and just going down this list and asking opinions. And I think you see the same thing there that you see on Twitter, in fan, you know, forums, from the voters themselves. There is a huge discrepancy in the way that, that these guys even rate players. There's by no means a consistency or a unifying theme across the board. There are guys that most people, you know, rate, but it's not how some people might think it would be, where there's a I'm searching for the word, a uniformity of opinion. Mm-hmm. It's not like that at all, and that's really, really interesting to see.
It's fascinating. It really is fascinating. Listen, Andrew, we got to let you go, but thanks so much for coming on the show to talk about this. It's a really interesting project. Keep up the good work, and we hope to talk to you soon.
No doubt. For people out there, www.mlssoccer.com/24/24. That's where you find the list.
There you go. Andrew Wiebe of MLSsoccer.com. Thanks again, Andrew. We really appreciate it. Like I said, if you haven't checked out the list, I highly recommend you doing it. It's not, like I said, it's not holy gospel. I think some people take it far too seriously. It's a good conversation starter. It's a good sort of dialogue to get going about MLS. And if it gets people talking, then I think that's only a good thing. That's it. That's another edition of the Soccer Central podcast in the books. Thanks for listening. James Sharman, Thomas Dobby, and Brendan Dunlop are going to be back with another edition of the podcast on Monday morning to recap the weekend that was in the Premier League. Until then, cheers for listening.